Hello again, witches, seekers, and friends, and welcome to the Fat Feminist Witch podcast, the show where we do a little ranting, raving, and wand waving. I'm your host, Paige Vanderbeck, and together we're going to explore magic and spirituality, social justice, the psychic realm, and truly modern witchcraft. Hello, friends. Thank you so much for tuning in today. I'm really excited to be back. You know, despite having tons of ideas for episodes for the show, I have been struggling to actually write and record anything. I had all of these great, like, half ideas, and I couldn't really see how to put them together and, you know, make them into something kind of real. I just couldn't focus at all. And when you combine that with the insomnia and headaches and scattered thoughts that I've been dealing with lately, you end up with this pretty succinct list of signs that my third eye chakra is out of balance. Then again, you also end up with a list of common symptoms of the evil eye or malocchio, or any number of hexes that could be cast in my direction. So today's episode is an exploration of the eye in magic, be it third or evil, belonging to an Egyptian god or floating atop a glowing pyramid even. I'm going to tell you how to diagnose the presence of evil eye, and ways that you can shake it off, of course, and how to balance the energy of your third eye or your brow chakra. Now, if you listen to the podcast on Spotify, you might notice that there are two versions of this episode, one labeled B-side. And what's fun about the B-sides is that these episodes include music. I've chosen a mix of songs either about eyes or in the key of A major, which resonates with the third eye chakra. And I think this makes the episodes both a little bit more fun and also functional. The B-sides are only available on Spotify because of licensing stuff with Anchor and Spotify, but the regular version can be heard absolutely anywhere, and I will make sure I put the playlist, the names of all the songs that I use, in the description of the episode if you want to listen to them your own way. A single, open, disembodied eye has been a symbol of mystery, magic, and knowledge going all the way back to ancient Egypt. And it's present in most human civilizations all over the world. Carl Jung would call the eye an archetype, a universal symbol that lives in the collective unconscious mind of all humanity. No matter where you go or what language you speak, the symbol of an eye is one that you can expect to see and even understand. The eye represents seeing the truth, possessing the wisdom to understand it, and then using that truth to advance your life or spirit. It also represents having a second sight or clairvoyance, psychic dreams, and being able to see or interact with other planes of existence. Finally, the eye is a symbol of vision, speaking artistically or creatively. It represents ideas and creations and being able to see the big picture, being able to see results far in the future. If that eye happens to belong to a god, however, it serves as a symbol of the watchful and protective nature of the deities that we hold dear. The symbol of the eye is full of power, which is what makes it such a fantastic element of protection, but also of magic. One of the most famous eye symbols in human history is the Egyptian Eye of Horus, which was usually carved into amulets and tombs to offer protection to the wearer, or the person in the tomb, by placing them under the watchful eye of Horus or Heru, the falcon-headed god of the sky and of kings. Horus was the son of goddess Isis and her husband Osiris, after Osiris had been murdered and dismembered by the god of chaos, his brother Set. Isis possessed really great magic and put her husband back together, conceiving a child, and then she fled into safety. Osiris, marked for death, knew he could no longer rule the living and thus became a god of the dead. Horus grew into a mighty god of the sky, with his right eye considered to be the sun and his left the moon, and his movement across the sky is what made them rotate every day and night. Horus's uncle Set, the chaotic god that ruled over Upper Egypt as well as the desert lands, was still vying for the ultimate throne, which was left empty after the death of Osiris, and spent more than 80 years challenging and battling Horus to win that right. Passing on the title of ruler from father to son was sacrosanct in ancient Egypt. It was the way it worked. And so the throne rightfully belonged to Horus, and the power could not be wielded by Set. This annoyed the shit out of the other gods, who tried to intervene more than one time, mostly to make the battle stop, because they were constantly at war. But Set was a really sore loser, and he refused to concede. Horus eventually succeeds and takes the throne in a story full of semen that is honestly kind of gross. You can look it up if you want. But not before Set cuts out his left eye, cuts it into 6 pieces, and spreads it throughout Egypt. The god Thoth, or Thoth, or Thoth, or depending on how you pronounce that, was tasked with finding and repairing the eye of Horus, just as Isis had found and repaired his father Osiris. And this was believed to be the source of the different phases of the moon. You know, each piece represented a different phase. The eye, though it had been repaired, had become something totally different. It was full of cracks and disturbances, but it still had the enormous power of the king of all Egypt. Every pharaoh was believed to be a descendant from the line of Horus, and were believed to be as him in their lifetime. When pharaohs would die, they would join with the spirit of Horus's father Osiris and continue to reign as king in the afterlife. So the Eye of Horus symbol is usually a left eye, with markings similar to a peregrine falcon, which is Horus's sacred animal, and it represents his watchful and benevolent eye, but also of unity and healing, no matter what tears you apart and, you know, feeds you to catfish in the Nile. It's a powerful symbol of divine protection and healing and unifying of the body, mind, and soul. The most common way to employ this symbol is with an amulet that can be worn right on your body, though it can also be hung in your home or your car for your protection, to protect your physical environment, your home, and also yourself. A lot of people, I see so many Eye of Horus tattoos, probably for the exact same reason, to have that protective energy on you at all times. Another popular symbol in the world of the occult that represents the watchful eye of the divine is the Eye of Providence. This is that single eye that's floating inside a pyramid, which you may recognize as being printed on the American dollar bill, and associated with really fun stories of Illuminati and Freemasons by conspiracy theorists and people who, like me, have enjoyed the Da Vinci Code an embarrassing amount of times. It's just so easy to read. The movie was so silly and fun. It's just great. Plus, I love seeing inside the Vatican archives. I know that scene wasn't like really in the Vatican archives, but I love the idea of being able to root through all of that amazing shit. Fun fact, the Eye of Providence actually predates the Freemasons, and they didn't start using it until after it became part of the seal of the United States in 1782. Before that, it was a well-known Christian symbol of undetermined origin, really, that represented the all-seeing eye of God. Its place in the Great Seal of the U.S. represented the beliefs of the early Americans that their colonization of the New World was ordained by God. It was all wrapped up in the idea of manifest destiny. Some of the, you know, most classic, just classic, iconic conspiracy theories claim that the eye floating inside this unfinished pyramid represents the role of the Freemasons and the Illuminati in building the physical and political foundation of America. But they're not the ones who actually stuck those two symbols together. Pyramids have always been a symbol of connecting humans with divinity and the cosmos. That's literally why, as far as we can tell, the pyramids of Egypt were built, to form a bridge the dead could travel to reach the gods. If the eye represents seeing the truth, the pyramid means that one is seeing the truth of the divine or through divine eyes. This symbol is often used to represent the concept of spiritual or sometimes intellectual enlightenment. Enlightenment means knowledge or understanding, the full comprehension of a situation. In religious or spiritual contexts, it means to have full comprehension of God or the nature of the universe. It's also used to describe a particular period of time in Western or in European history known as the Age of Enlightenment, which coincided with the general rise of, you know, the scientific method as we know it today, and the focus on rational and logical thought. It's also the time when we as humans really began to connect with our physical bodies and with how we use them to interact with the world. And the physical things that both unite and divide all humans from each other. This philosophy made its way through Europe via a lot of sources like writing and art and plays, of course. But one of its favorite places to live was Masonic lodges and even coffee houses, where intellectual or the enlightened crowd, right, would meet to discuss philosophy. Hipsters are ancient. One of the most famous and I think kind of remarkable ideas during this time came from René Descartes, who said, "I think, therefore I am." I'm sure you've heard that before, which really laid the groundwork for modern magic and the occult and witchcraft, and the idea that our thoughts and what we focus our energy on shapes the world around us and shapes who we are as people. The Age of Enlightenment, that this philosophy, it gave us some agency in the grand scheme of everything, instead of saying, well, that happened because of God, or that happened to me because of God. I have this because of God. Instead, you might have this because of something you did. You might have this because this is how the universe works. It's a thinking man's philosophy. The word itself, enlightenment, is a sort of translation for a Hindu word, bodhi, which was used to describe the intellect and the wisdom of the Buddha, which, of course, the Buddha attained over time with study and dedication and meditation, though we don't know exactly what it is that led to his enlightenment specifically. So this is where we get the idea of waking up intellectually and spiritually and suddenly being able to see the truth of the universe. This isn't just a spiritual awakening, a spiritual term. This is an awakening of the mind and of the heart as well. Enlightenment comes when a person can stop living for and craving the things they don't or can't have, when they stop wanting to take from others or needing to have more than others, when they stop obsessing over a future that may never exist or a past that is long gone. Enlightenment comes when someone can live in the here and now, content with what they have and who they are, and content to let other people do the same. In our modern times, we also use it to describe a connection with our true and authentic self, which is often hidden behind, you know, who we have to be to exist or to be successful in our modern society, which, of course, existing in our modern society, which is very capitalistic, involves craving. Involves taking and exploitation. It involves wanting and desire and reaching for the future and even kind of obsessing over the past, all of which, of course, keeps us from this concept of enlightenment. Now, there's a lot to unpack there. That's a whole idea, right? But all of that symbolism has been synthesized into the image of a single wide open eye and tells us that if we just open up, if we pay attention, and if we look in the right direction, we will see everything we need to be happy and whole individuals. If you are listening to the B-side, we've got our first music break. Enjoy! The third eye is another archetypal concept that appears over and over throughout human history. The third eye, or mind's eye, is a spiritual belief that we all possess an eye that is undetectable by regular physical means, meaning it's invisible. And that eye allows us to perceive things beyond the physical. Hinduism has a particular name for this point, which is the Ajna or brow chakra, commonly referred to these days as our third eye chakra. This energy point, which is accessible through the middle of our foreheads or between the eyes, depending on who you talk to, connects us to intuition, allows us to see and receive spiritual messages, and perceive psychic energy like auras. It's used or opened during practices such as meditation and divination, and is even accessed in the realm of dreams when what we see in our sleep is, you know, it's a little bit more than just the events of the day. This is also said to be the energy center that guides all of our other chakras. In the 1880s, world-famous medium and the creator of the religion of theosophy, Helena Blavatsky, so cool, suggested that the third eye is actually a very real part of the human brain, one we can see should we crack our heads open and take a peek. Please do not do that. There is a small piece, a small organ in our brains called the pineal gland, which sits right between the two hemispheres of the brain. This is part of our endocrine system, which secretes hormones. And the pineal gland's main hormone is melatonin, which is what determines our sleeping habits. It really does function as the fuel for our general internal clock, though. Levels of melatonin fluctuate differently throughout the seasons. And in animals, the production of melatonin tells them when it's time to shed or to molt, when to get fat for the winter. I love when they do that. Or even when it's time to, you know, make babies or to find yourself a mate. So the pineal gland literally reacts to light changes in our environment around us to produce the melatonin we need to sleep properly, which is, of course, absolutely vital to our health. You really need to sleep. Pineal gland is also said to affect another small piece of our brains known as the pituitary gland, which regulates other fun hormones like the ones we use for love and sex and birth, like oxytocin, which is like the love chemical. Even our friend Descartes referred to the pineal gland as the seat of the human soul. These two glands are interchangeably described as the real third eye. Honestly, we don't actually know everything the pineal gland does, or why it grows where it does, or why it seems to be so different from the anatomy of the rest of our brains. And wherever there is an absence of understanding, you know, the mystical and magical are there to fill in the blanks, should you, you know, need that. So just like with plants and crystals, the physical or the natural properties of a thing often tells you about its supernatural or magical properties. The area of the brain that reacts to light and influences our sleep and dream world, being what also opens our intuition and psychic senses, even in dreams, makes quite a bit of sense, doesn't it? Whether or not you think you have a physical third eye, you can work with it just like you do any of the other chakras. The first step is making sure the energy of this chakra is balanced. If there's not enough energy moving through it, you could feel confused or foggy, have trouble recalling memories, or have trouble using your imagination. You know, you don't have that vision. Problem solving could also be a challenge. If you're regularly someone with a very visual mind and suddenly that's no longer the case, this could be the work of an underactive third eye. Another problem you might notice is that you may be resistant to seeing or accepting the truth of situations, and unable to look toward the future. You know, you can't really see the big picture. When there's too much energy being directed through the third eye, you could be prone to fantasizing constantly, living entirely in a non-real world, with no follow-through that makes dreams come true. You know, you're stuck in there, you're running away from reality. Likewise, the tendency to overthink things and ignore intuitive nudges kind of goes through the roof. At the very worst end of the spectrum, someone could become incredibly manipulative, using their intelligence and charisma to make their own dreams come true at the expense of others. This is where someone comes to using people to attain their own vision and, you know, without having to share any of the good stuff. When the chakra is balanced and healthy, you are charismatic and able to communicate your vision with others without that sneaky desire to screw them over and take all the glory for yourself. You're more open to the ideas and perspectives of other people and are able to change your expectations and your goals when you get some new information. Your intuition and intellect work in tandem, and you're able to tell the difference between intuition and other feelings like fear that could cloud your judgment. A healthy third eye chakra is also the seat of your psychic abilities, no matter which ones they are. The third eye is what allows you to see beyond the physical, or even logical, into the supernatural or surprising. You're better at expecting the unexpected, and possibly even seeing it coming. This can also affect your dreams. Everyone dreams and recalls dreams differently, so if something changes, you'll notice. But it's also possible you've had an imbalance in the chakra for a very long time. So if you've always struggled to record or remember your dreams, consider showing your third eye a little love and see what happens. Likewise, if you struggle with, you know, recurring dreams or nightmares that are really disruptive, that could be a sign that there's a little too much going through the chakra there. You could also visit someone like a Reiki practitioner, and they can tell you, you know, exactly what's going on in each of the chakras and help regulate the flow and, you know, give you some ideas on how to keep this more balanced in the future. The element of the third eye chakra is light. And so a really neat way of balancing the third eye is exposing it to the light of the sun or the moon, or using a special blue or indigo light bulb. You can also practice meditation or even divination by using the flame of a candle as a focus point. Now, your third eye may not need balancing per se, it might be fine, but there may be times when you want to focus your energy on the third eye specifically, or even make it more powerful. Like before you read tarot cards, or when you're sitting down to work on a creative project, or even before bed to increase your psychic dream connection. One of my favorite little rituals is to use rose water or, you know, a special oil blend to anoint my third eye while rubbing it in a clockwise motion to kind of open it up. Some really good oils for this are jasmine. Jasmine's my personal favorite. Lavender, rose, lemongrass, frankincense, which is really nice and spiritual, and clary sage. Other oils that are very clarifying, like peppermint and eucalyptus, are also great if you feel like you really need to open that eye up or maybe clear anything that might be blocking the way. If your third eye feels overactive, patchouli oil can help ground it in reality without blunting those psychic or magical impulses. Crystals can also be used like this. So simply hold an appropriate crystal up to your third eye, close your regular eyes, your physical eyes, and focus your energy on the point where you can feel the crystal. I have a small skull-shaped amethyst crystal that I like to use like this before divination or before bed. Skulls and magic are a symbol of the mind and also communication, so it's a crystal that I use for sending and receiving spiritual messages. Amethyst is a third eye stone. It's a third eye and a crown chakra stone. Normally, the crystals you find for the third eye, though, are indigo. The color associated with the third eye is indigo blue, which is a really deep blue that is nearly purple. Like, it's like a dark blue that has a little bit of purple in it. If you're old like me and watched Rainbow Bright, there was actually an indigo color kid, and she was my absolute favorite. Indigo doll was Arabic. I believe she was Arabic. She had puffy pants that looked like a genie, and back then that's kind of what that meant. And she really rocked the indigo color, okay? Those puffy genie pants looked great. And she loved to sing and dance and act, and she was just really, like, dramatic and dynamic. She was really cool. Anyways, indigo is the color of the third eye, and some crystals in this shade that are really, really great are sapphire, demeturite, labradorite, and azurite. Sapphire is the Virgo birthstone, and so I really like it when you need to use your third eye and focus on things like problem solving, discipline, manifestation, achieving your goals. It's a very, like, grounding third eye stone. I have a ring with, you know, small pieces of sapphire on it that I tend to put on when I'm really trying to get some work done like that, and I need my imagination, my vision to be working in top form. Demeturite, which I have a small piece of, it can be a little bit pricey. Then again, so can sapphire, is on the more psychic end of the spectrum, and it amplifies spiritual abilities and intuition. It helps you understand divinatory symbols better, so it's really great for people that are trying to make a living with their psychic or spiritual skills. So if you are trying to learn astrology or tarot reading or whatever for professional purposes, it can help you learn that. It can also help you be a little bit better at running your business once it's actually up and running. It's a good stone for accessing the soul and the Akashic records and your, you know, the past and future in that context. So it can help you release past life baggage and break patterns and habits that keep you from moving forward. Any meditation at all acts as a soothing and strengthening exercise for the third eye. But you can also focus on that point specifically by visualizing the color indigo or holding one of the aforementioned crystals in your hands. Music and sound can be used to balance and activate your third eye as well, as they can for all chakras. Singing bowls, bells, and tuning forks that are all calibrated to the musical note A can all get your chakra to buzz at the right frequency. You can also listen to songs in the key of A major, which I talked about in a previous podcast episode called Musicology. Here's a fun example. I picked two songs in the key of A major that I think are super great for third eye activities. So first we have Circus by Britney Spears, hashtag Free Britney, which features the lyrics, all eyes on me in the center of the ring, just like a circus. Yeah, jam out to it. It's a very empowering, self-confidence type song. So this is for when you need to tap into that imaginative vision and your intuition and intellect. You need them to be working together to create something or to make something happen. That's where Circus by Britney Spears comes in. Then there's Fade Into You by Mazzy Star, which is it definitely has a much dreamier vibe. But the whole song talks of seeing the truth and feeling truly understood by another person, so much so that you feel, you know, you're in each other's heads. This is a really great song for nighttime witchy shit of all kinds. So this is on my full moon playlist, tarot reading, dreamy songs, all those playlists. And it works great. The really gentle and kind of simple rhythm is really good for meditation. It's really easy to fall in line with it. You know, it's like a pendulum swinging back and forth. So I usually end up swaying a little bit when I'm listening to it, which is meditative all on its own. So let's listen to those and maybe you'll see what I mean. Though the third eye serves as a touch point for all psychic abilities, the power of clairvoyance or clear seeing is especially concentrated here. Though this word is used to describe psychic ability in general, clairvoyance is just kind of a colloquial term for psychics. It is specifically the ability to receive psychic information through sight or images. It's different for everyone, so for some people it's really vivid psychic dreams full of symbols that they have to interpret. Some have full-on visions, even while they're awake. Others can see certain symbols and signs that stand out more to convey messages. Other people can see things like auras all the time, you know, spiritual energy. They can really see it with their eyes. Someone who's clairvoyant and able to talk to the dead is more likely to see the dead versus just hearing a disembodied voice. Some people may see psychic images with their physical eyes, like people who can just see auras around people. Or it may take place entirely in the mind, where the third eye resides. Ancient Egyptians weren't the only culture who used a symbol of an eye for protection. Nearby Turkey and Greece had their own symbol of the watchful eye of the divine. The Nazar in Turkey and the Mati in Greece is a cobalt blue eye, usually made of glass, that is said to repel the energy of the evil eye. Glass art like this has been practiced for like 3,000 years in the Mediterranean, and this charm in particular has become a really big part of modern popular culture in the whole area. You know, it's tourists actually flock to bazaars and markets in Turkey and in Greece just to buy the charms. And I mean, who can blame them? They're so beautiful. The cobalt blue colors is so close to the color of the third eye that I know for a lot of witches, you know, they've come to use this symbol specifically as a charm for spiritual or psychic protection. You know, it's very third eye-esque. For me, I've been collecting the blue glass specifically. I love blue glass for my altar and for my witchy purposes since I started practicing as a kid. So I have like, you know, cups, chalices, plates, bowls, old jars and bottles and candle holders, all that kind of stuff. So I also have a few of these charms hanging around my altar as well, because that blue glass to me is just so magical. It's just witchy as hell. It's witchy. So while that symbol, the Nazar symbol, is definitely one of protection, it's very much tied to psychic work and witchcraft for me. The charm itself is often called the evil eye. That's what most people know it as, but that's actually what it protects against. The evil eye is a type of spell that exists all over the world, not just the Mediterranean. I'm actually reading American Brujeria right now with my Patreon group, and there's a whole chapter dedicated to the evil eye and clearing it out with, you know, cleansing like egg cleansings and really cool stuff like that. The author also talks about rue being the best herb for protection against and getting rid of the evil eye, which is also pretty true in Italian folk magic. Really fun. So the evil eye, or malocchio as it's called in Italian, is a spell cast out of jealousy or envy, often totally unintentionally. Envy has always been associated with the eyes. After all, it's what we use to, you know, covet things. And also envy is often tied with a very vain or kind of shallow perception of beauty, which is just negative. You know, it's that idea of enlightenment. You can see what other people have without needing to take it from them or needing it for yourself because you have enough. So it's believed that if someone is jealous of you or something you have, that emotional energy can, you know, transfer to you, can attack you via a glance and make you sick. The most common symptoms of the evil eye are things like sudden headaches and nausea, maybe fainting spells or dizziness, maybe even a rash, depending on how things went. It can also cause kind of general bad luck, like if someone is incredibly jealous of your car, you'll end up with car trouble, or if they're jealous of your hair, your next visit to the salon might be some kind of disaster, or, you know, whatever. Since it's often unintentional, Italians live in fear not only of being afflicted, but also of casting the curse. And it's really common in Italian culture not to compliment anyone, and if you do, to, you know, say a little blessing after. Even go so far as to, you know, come up with pet names, lovingly call babies ugly and stuff like that, so they don't unintentionally cast the curse. And I'm just going to use it as an excuse. I'm going to blame all of my inability to take a compliment on that forever. I swear to God, that's it now. Italians also have their own amulets for protection. One is a horn that's usually red, so it looks like a chili pepper, and this is called a corno. Symbols of strength and virility are really powerful in Italy, as are like rude or kind of sexual symbols and gestures. So the horn is a really phallic symbol of like virility and strength. And it often has a little gold crown on top, which just gives it even more power and authority, right? And there are a few different versions, and my favorite version of the corno is called a gobbo, and it's because it features a small hunchback character in a tuxedo and a top hat holding a horseshoe. And the bottom half of him is actually the red horn. So he's so wonderful. He's especially lucky in money type situations. So I keep him hanging inside my purse on a loop in there. It's really good luck to rub his little hunchback. And his complete weirdness is just my favorite thing. It makes the whole thing just completely perfect for me. So that's my favorite. Another term you might find is a red hand, doing the sign of the horns, you know, with the index and pinky fingers sticking out, everything else tucked in. This is called the mano cornuta, and you can also make this hand sign with your hand on the sly to block the evil eye if you feel like someone is, you know, creeping you out. When it comes to figuring out if you're cursed, as far as I can tell, the quickest way to find out is to find an Italian grandmother. According to the Malocchio documentary film by Agatha DeSantis, every mom, aunt, and grandmother had a way to diagnose and cure the Malocchio. They had all learned it from their mothers, right? Very, very cool. And they all did it a little bit differently. For a lot of people, this process is kept secret, right? You know, every family has their own way of doing things. But fortunately, the evil eye has become really popular with younger people who want to connect with ancestral folk magic. So you can find lots of newer or more public practices, or you can even create your own. What I'm going to tell you is the Italian way. So if someone is exhibiting symptoms of malocchio, grab a big shallow bowl, like the kind you'd use for pasta or salad, and no, that's not a joke, and fill it about two-thirds of the way with water. Have the afflicted person hold the bowl. Some insist they have to hold it over their heads, or they can just hold it, whatever, but have them hold it, and drop 3 drops of olive oil into the water. Some use a spoon, some say it's got to come straight from the bottle. Give the oil a minute to, you know, right itself, to stop moving, and then you read the oil to detect the presence of Malocchio. So if the three drops of oil stay as they are and they don't move around a lot, it's all kind of calm, then no evil eye is present. If the drops continue moving around for a long time, if they rush together and merge or kind of rush out to the edges of the bowl, or if the drops spread out so much it's nearly invisible, then Malocchio may be present. Next is performing the cure. If you want to do it yourself, Mary Grace Farren has a method in her book Italian Folk Magic, and it starts on page 160. She also has a video on her YouTube channel showing you how to perform the cure and reading you the prayers in much nicer Italian than I could possibly pull off. So I will put the link in the description to that for you guys. What you need is a pair of scissors, some salt, and a white candle. Light the candle, and if you like, say a prayer for protection for yourself from whatever curse it is that you're trying to cure. In the book, Mary Grace has an opening and a closing prayer to the Archangel Michael for this purpose. Then you say the Malocchio charm. Now, I'm going to read it in English for you, but in the book, she does have it in both Italian and English, and she says, give it a shot, just read it phonetically. It doesn't matter if you screw it up. I just don't like the way I butcher languages, so I'm going to read the English for you. Sensisto, sensisto, throughout the day and throughout the night, drive away from this person, drive away from us, this dark spirit and miserable death. Tear out, stomp on every eye that seeks to harm. Here I do the sign of the cross. Then open up your scissor and use one of the points to cut through each drop of oil in the shape of a cross. Hold the scissors above the bowl and recite this charm. Holy Monday, Holy Tuesday, Holy Wednesday, Holy Thursday, Holy Friday, Holy Saturday, and Easter Sunday. In the name of Christ, the evil eye bursts. And then open and close your scissors three times, cutting the air above the bowl. Then you take three pinches of salt and sprinkle them in the water. And once you do that, the Malocchio is neutralized. Then dip your thumb in the oil and the water and trace the sign of the cross three times on the forehead, right over where the third eye is, three times on the back of the neck, which is not far from the pineal gland, fun fact, and three times over the heart. Now you can do this for someone who is not physically in the area with you, in which case you could just draw the sign of the cross in the air over the bowl as you hold them in your mind. And if you are not Catholic, that is totally okay. You can create your own spell or prayer if you like, but think instead of these particular incantations as being powered by centuries of powerful Italian women using the magic of their faith to heal and protect the people they love. That's how I like to think of it. In the video, Mary Grace Farren really makes me laugh. In the video, she's like, you don't have to be Catholic. Trust me. She's like, I don't even know who San Sisto is. I've just been saying this prayer for decades. And it really just perfect example of using these prayers for magic. No matter what it is that you believe in, it's your belief that powers it, right? The eye is a universal symbol of humanity's belief in the divine and in something that exists beyond our physical perception. Whether you're tapping in for psychic messages or using it as a shield against envy and manipulation, the magic of the eye is something that speaks to us and makes us feel safe and even powerful. In your magic, you can incorporate this energy by carving an eye into your candles, using charms and amulets in this shape or associated with eyes for everything from psychic work to manifestation. You can use your mind to visualize your intention or even create a piece of visual art to ground that idea in reality. You can use makeup and contacts to enhance your eyes and imbue them with magic through colors and designs. You don't have to be jealous to cast a spell with your eyes. You can choose to send out different kinds of energy through a look or even some real eye contact. Don't tell me you've never used a look to communicate incognito, because I know you have. What is a sexy glance across the room if not a quick love spell? Or that disappointed look you get from your mom or give to your kids? That's definitely a little bit of a karma spell to influence guilt and possibly reparations. Thank you so much for joining me today, witches. I hope this episode was as entertaining as it was enlightening. If you enjoyed the music, you can find the link to the whole Spotify playlist, including songs that didn't actually make it into the finished episode, in the description. Enjoy. If you're a Virgo, your birthday season begins next week, so happy birthday, Virgos, including my lovely dad. I hope you all have a wonderful weekend, witches, and a lovely full moon in Aquarius on Sunday the 22nd, which would be a perfect time to bathe your third eye in a little magical moonlight. To learn more about me or the Fat Feminist Witch podcast, check out my website at thefatfeministwitch.com or find me on Twitter, Instagram, or Facebook. If you like the content here on the show and you want a little bit more, check out my books Green Witchcraft and The Grimoire Journal. Both books are written for witches of all skill levels to help you begin a relationship with the planet, deepen the one you already have, and craft a very personal, magical practice. If you want to support the show, you can make a donation by going to my website and clicking the button that says Buy Me a Coffee, or you can join my private monthly membership group at patreon.com/thefatfeministwitch. For years, you wonderful, die-hard listeners of The Fat Feminist Witch have been asking me where you can get t-shirts, bags, and other swag to represent your love of The Fat Feminist Witch. And I'm so excited to finally tell you that I have Fat Feminist Witch merch or swag, whatever you like to call it, now available from TeePublic. You can get t-shirts that feature the podcast logo, great phrases like ranting, raving, and wand waving, and even little jokes about your extensive witchy book collection. I've got tote bags, t-shirts, custom notebooks, and all sorts of designs I'm adding to and updating all the time. So check out the link in the description for my new TeePublic store where you can get Fat Feminist Witch podcast swag. When you get it, please take a picture and tag me anywhere on social media. I can't wait to see how great you guys look in it.